It would be a water spot, eh?
On goes full. Seaford might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast. Rich Hobbs here, and join me. It feels like it's a Cage Fighters crossover today because I've got Stu and Andy.
Yeah. Well, it is at the minute till Matthew returns. We're going to just put this out anyway because we're not doing an episode this week because Andy's tired. So we they can double dip if they want, or they can listen to this for a change.
Yeah. I've been angling to try and get some free goodies in order to talk about a DVD, and they didn't come through, so we're not talking about it. So it's their problem, isn't it?
Yeah. I am slightly disappointed for the YouTube watchers of the show, and big thanks for everyone joining us. You've not changed your name, Andre. You've changed your Twitter handle. Don't think that's gone unnoticed.
I've been trying to change it just to @Gillard, but they won't let me do it, and I don't know why. But yeah, I'm not ready to jump over to Andre yet. The thing is, it's becoming a little bit too widely known that people who I've only ever interacted with on Twitter, and they're referring to me as Andre, and I'm like, fuck. Thanks, little Dan.
We should probably talk about football at some point today. But before we talk about the Wolves win, which I was going to say feels like forever ago, let's talk about another football match, gents. Because, of course, on the 24th of May, Wolves Fancast are holding our annual charity football match at this point. So it's Fancast and Friends versus Upload United. It'll be a great opportunity to raise some funds for Mind Mental Health Charity. So it's for a fantastic cause. So the game's happening on Friday, 24th of May. Hopefully in the next 4 weeks or so, we'll try and stick out a few bits and pieces in terms of content in the build-up to the game as well. So it's something that we've all been championing over Fancast for, gosh, last 5 years or so now, it feels like. And you know, events like this and fundraisers like this where you kind of bring it all together. The link is in the description. It's also kind of wheeling across your screen as well for anyone who's watching live, of course. So if you've kind of, if you're able to, please feel free to donate. And yeah, it should be a really fun event. But look, let's get into yesterday, because as we said beforehand, we're back to winning ways, fellas. Oh, don't we all feel happy and joyful again after, you know, weeks, months, years, decades of...
it did feel like it was never going to happen in 2024 for quite a while, didn't it? It felt like our race had been run. So, yeah, weekend always feels better when we've got a Wolves win, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Stu, you were saying... you know, post Arsenal, maybe even before Arsenal, you know, we're not going to win a league game at all for, you know, generations.
Yeah, no, well, especially after the Coventry game as well. I mean, that seemed like the end point, but I didn't bank on Luton being that pathetic, really. So that kind of helped things. But yeah, we'll get into that in a minute. Lineup wise, I was excited for the first time in weeks.
Was that just because Wang and Kuna were starting for what I believe was the first time in 2024?
Yeah, it always helps. And the fact that he was getting back to some kind of fitness as well, we know with Wang, it always takes him a while to get back up to speed again. And then normally he has a purple patch and then he collapses again, and that's just the way it is. But yeah, the fact that we had a three-man midfield and it wasn't them, the usual suspects, so it was a bit of refreshment. And I thought Boubacar Traoré was unlucky to be dropped when he was, after his performances. And well, okay, give the kid a go. He's been unlucky because the other three have done so well when they've all played, but they can't play together, as we've talked about many times over the last few weeks. So seeing him there, that was one of them plus points for me.
Yeah,
I don't know what that means. But...
Well, we all know, Stu. well, I was going to say something hopefully insightful. I mean, we'll talk fully about Bouba Traore in terms of his game, but Andy, I think it's safe to say that at least us three, and I think to be honest, across the board, we're all big fans of him. And it's been a shame he's played more this season. For
He struggled, I think, because when chances have come around, his fitness has not quite been there. Or obviously, he went away in January for the Africa Nations. So his time has never quite come, which is such a shame. But like Stu said, he was very unlucky to be dropped in the week. And when he came on, even like it was a bad performance for most of the team, he was really the only bright spot in that game. So I was pleased to see him rewarded with a start yesterday. Because I think he's more than just this defensive midfield that I think some fans think he is. I think some think he's just there to break it up. But actually, he's got a bit of skill and he's got a bit of pace to help you drive up the pitch. He's not just an ankle biter. He's got a bit of power in him as well, which I really appreciate.
Yeah, I do think he is someone who can fall into stereotypes if you're not careful. And you look at the size and the physicality and how he presents himself on the pitch a lot of the time, but he is just I'm as guilty as anyone. Don't get me wrong. I think, he's not someone who's afraid of a tackle and he enjoys that side of a game, but it's also quite reductive to, say, he's just in there to, be a physical presence. Cause you see what he can do on the ball and he looks a little bit awkward with it in the same way someone like Toti Gomez can sometimes look a little bit awkward on the ball, but I think it's kind of because of the size of them. But
it's quite gangly, isn't it, to look at?
Yeah.
But I did see a tweet earlier where someone said that Alfred and Dai walked so that Bouba Traore could yes. run. And that feels perfect for what kind of a player he is for me.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
I was thinking a bit further back with Oliver Jana, but it's all a similar kind of thing.
Yeah.
Big, tall, lanky midfielders who you think have got the strength to put a foot in, but they never did. But now Bouba does. And he is that comment is spot on, because we've had these players before and they never do anything. But now we've got someone who's still youngish and he's still adapting to the league even after a year. Let him hit balls, because he's got a strike. Oh, there we are in the comments as well. He's got a strike on him.
Well, I was going to say that's something I've been enjoying in his appearances recently, is he does seem to be on a one-man mission to get the only goal Wolves will ever score from outside the box this season. And I admire, because obviously, particularly under O'Neill, there's so much, you can see the tactical preparation they put into games in terms of creating these patterns, openings in the middle of the pitch and this next level stuff. It isn't just hoof it long down the channels. And sometimes it does just feel like, if I get the opportunity from 25 yards out, I'm just going to lever the ball out. Just give it a go. And I respect that in him.
Yeah, previous years, that's all we've had is players who want to have a pot shot from 25 yards out. And now we've been subjected to the other side where we'll only shoot within 12 yards. We need that nice balance between the two, and Boobs might be that balance between the two.
Yeah. Can we call him Boobs?
I was going to say, what are you thinking? Booba? Boob? Boobs?
I think just to cover ourselves, I think Boob is probably fine.
I mean, does it cover you? Does it?
Depends how big they are, Rich. That's the...
Well, that's true. I mean, he's definitely a handful.
There you go.
Thank you for everyone listening to today's episode of Wolves Fancast.
Not even 9 o'clock.
It's always 9 o'clock somewhere, Stu. Oh, dude, I was going to say, we've covered Bouba Traore now. So, no, we're not reading that comment out.
Oh, Ashley.
I was going to say, for the audio listeners, we'll leave it there. But hey, look, he is someone who has kind of stepped up, and I think he's kind of had his opportunity, I guess, almost like 5 games too late in a way, because the season has petered out, as we said, and it feels like whether it's that O'Neill's not quite trusted him or he's not quite fitted into the system, it does feel like he is someone who has really forced his way into reckoning this season. And you know, you reflect back on last season and kind of going into this season, he almost felt like he was always the fourth choice, but it wasn't a huge gap, and he seems to have kind of really narrowed it now. So that, like, if Lamina, you know, say the next season, if Lamina's out injured or suspended, or Gomez, you know, isn't available, it feels like he is a much more viable option than he was like 3 weeks ago, even now. And I think that's, you know, a really positive thing. The other side of it is, if he can't nail down a first team spot in the summer, he's at least kind of given that sprinkling of, you know, shop window magic.
Yeah, and we can't just have three midfielders all season long. It doesn't work.
It's work. I was going to say, is that not the Fosun way?
Yeah. Not talking about them today at all. It's a happy day. We don't need to start. There's plenty of times in the next 3 weeks that can be brought up, but not behave myself.
It's fine. It's fine. Hey, look. Yeah. But no, it is good that he's getting some game time. As we mentioned before, that, you know, it's Hwang and Kuna starting for the first time, you know, this calendar year. And it's a bit mad to think that they are, you know, effective, our two highest goal scorers, and between them, they've not had them in a fixtures together in, you know, best part of half a season now. I guess the other sort of what we probably need to talk about is the defence, because again, there were ums and ahs about how we're going to line up with, you know, effectively Bueno being out injured, Doherty coming in for him, and us having kind of three wing backs in Semedo, Doherty, and Ait Nouri, and how it was gonna fit. I mean, were the alarm bells going off in either of your heads pre kickoff and frankly during the game?
Yeah, anytime I see Doherty's name on the team list, I just fear for it. And the thing is, I think that Hugo Bueno has had a couple of decent games, so I don't really understand why he picked Doherty over him, especially at right wing back when Semedo's been player of the season contender. And then he sort of curtails Semedo's natural game by putting him at the centre half position. Like, there were so many questions on how you're going to line it up, and I saw them training pre-match. It looked like Doc was going to be the right centre-back, but he wasn't. So I've got to admit, I felt fairly confident going in because Luton don't score a lot of goals, but at the same time, I did wonder what the fuck he was doing, if I'm being perfectly honest, that in the defence. Was it going to be four? Was it going to be five? I know we're fairly fluid, but even so, Doherty doesn't add to fluidity, generally speaking. So, I didn't have a clue what he was picking, why he was picking two right backs and a left back. So I was a bit concerned, I've got to be honest with that.
Yeah. I mean, kind of, let's get into the game itself, because as I joked pre-show, sort of said, well, Wolves was a lot better than they have been recently. And were they much better, or was it a bit more of a case of Luton, you know, in the relegation zone for a reason, Stu?
I mean, you need a bit of luck sometimes, and you need the fixture computer to give you a nice clean one. And this was, you think, well, Luton, I can't believe they've got the amount of points that they've got on that showing. And I've seen them a few times recently, and it looks like they've run out of steam. But still, you look at the chances that they had again, and Saar had to be top of his game to keep us in it. I mean, that's a mental thing to say, considering we've won against Luton, but he pulled off some brilliant saves yet again. And yeah, they were shooting from distance, and there was a few of the usual chaotic moments, but they still had their chances. And on another day, we'd have gone in behind again at half time. So it's not all rosy. It's not a brilliant performance by any means, but it was almost like once we did keep them at bay, and when we did get the first, it was like, okay, you can see their heads drop. It was like, okay. And then And the, on the flip side of it, you look, okay, we can actually score goals again. Huang's back. Cunha's played a decent ball into him, but he still had a lot to do from there. And you think, okay, everything's rowdy again. And again, the ball from Saar, no pissing about, no messing about where you need to. Just get it out and get it long, and it worked. Brilliant. That's the best for weeks. When you play to his strengths and you don't ask him to do things he can't do, look what happens. Brilliant. But then...
I'm not sure I fully agree with that, though, Stu, because he did try it a few times yesterday and his kicking was straight out for a throw-in just as often as it found one of our own players. Yeah, so but... I do think there is a time and a place where you have to think about things and not just immediately go long.
Yeah, but I'd rather...
But he's also a bit of a danger when it comes to his kicking.
But I'd rather the ball go out of play for a throw-in than go in the back of the net. Which is what it's been.
We don't concede that many, though, when we do the playing out from the back. We don't give up a lot of chances with that, in fairness.
We have got away with
it. There are other areas we fuck up completely, but I don't think playing out the back is a particular negative in this team. Watch us fucking concede by doing it against Man City now. Yeah,
I was going to say, what I would say is I am kind of in favour, in a way, of territorial, positional-based football, by which I mean it's sometimes good not to have the ball near your own goal and have it nearer to the opposition's. But with that, it's sometimes better to, you know, keep possession than it is to, you know, lose it. And what I'd say, have I said what I said twice? What I'd say to that, if my own argument, is if you look at the goal, but yeah, Kunda's the right thing lumping it up the pitch. Our players don't actually win it.
No.
It's through, like, you know, savvy work from Cunha to not necessarily, you know, he knows he's not going to win the first one, but to then kind of gamble on a bad, you know, touch by the Luton defender. I think it highlights for me that, like, you get, like, one every, like, 10 games, would it be, from Saar, where it's just this, like, pinpoint down the field where it needs to go. And I think we all kind of pull back to, you know, Jimenez versus Southampton in our heads.
Yeah.
But I can also think of like a couple of occasions where he's got it, ran to the edge of a box, which is what they're trained to do, and then just absolutely shanked one.
Straight.
I'm thinking like the one against Liverpool earlier this season.
Oh, he did yesterday again?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And it's just like that lack of consistency. And part of it is you've got to rely on, you know, I always think it's, yeah, make them start blaming a goalkeeper and they're kicking. Like, partly they're getting told to do it. If you aren't going to have the people pushing forward, then it doesn't really matter if he's running to the edge of a box. If, like, you know, your midfielders or your fullbacks or your wide players aren't, like, all alert to it as well.
There was a number of times yesterday people were saying for him to kick it long.
There's no one there.
When you look, everyone's facing the opposition goal, moving to their positions. Mm. So you can't just boot it long every single time.
It's like I,
and I think we need to understand that a little bit better in the stand sometimes.
It's like I used to hate it when it was Patricio in goal and every single kick, it would be hook it out to Matt Doherty.
Yeah.
And just, and because he's good in the air, don't get me wrong. But just we were so susceptible and so, you know, formulaic on it. It was like it's not going to end well. But if you don't have anything else in your locker, it's a bit frustrating. But the goal itself, I mean, like it comes from that, I guess, that next level of quality that we have kind of been missing to have. You know, Cunha being smart enough, being intelligent enough to pick up a loose ball and to get his head up and play a incisive pass. And then being able to pass it to someone like Quang, who, you know, he had a couple of chances yesterday where just that, you know, ability and that keenness to push on the last man.
He had a sighted in there and it was a bit soft. But that's never really been his strong point anyway. He's always, I think Dean commented on it on Twitter / X earlier about the how does he keep getting away with it, where he does his cut back on defenders over and over again and just slots it in the same place every time.
Yeah.
But it's like the Saka goal today for against Spurs. Everyone knew what he was going to do, but he couldn't be stopped. Mainly because Spurs didn't have a left back, really. But it was a similar kind of thing. You know where he's going to go. That's like his little trademark finish now. And we haven't had anyone like that. We haven't had strikers here. And Gary O'Neill was right when he said that.
Yeah. Yeah, I did kind of enjoy O'Neill's like post-match tunnel interview where it's like he literally said, "Yeah, it's great having actual centre forwards." Yeah, would have been great if you didn't ship out two of them in January. But
well,
one of them's fucking dog. I mean, I tell you what, that's been a popcorn moment. At it, what Rangers Twitter this weekend.
Can we let's get to the exact thing from Rangers Central at Rangers Central. I've seen some shite play for Rangers in my 23 years of living. Fabio Silva is the first player I've genuinely been embarrassed at the fact that he pays for us. With all due respect, even if my club is getting Premier League money, if they spent 40 million on him, I genuinely feel ill. He's struggling in the lower divisions up here, let alone this. So no, I wouldn't.
It's hard to argue, isn't it?
Yeah. He's a waste of space, and I'm glad he's not here, even when we had nothing else, because he's shit. And people just got to realize he's shit. There's no, oh yeah, he's in a wrong place. It doesn't matter what happened in the past. He's not good enough, and so it doesn't matter that he's not here. If he was here, we'd have probably got less points from him being on the pitch.
True. There's no way he's worse than Nathan Fraser. And that's not a knock on Nathan Fraser. He's a better player than him. He's very much a confidence player, though, from what we've seen. When he's been at a club where he's sort of fitted and been part of it, he seems to have done okay. But I don't think he ever really fit in here. And obviously now we've shipped out a few of the Portuguese guys, he fits in even less to an extent.
He's got He's got two goals in 14 games in Scotland.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck him. He's shit. You are right there.
I love the... It's in Scotland.
It is pub league, isn't it? And he's just... He's just not going to make it, is he? Not like he needs to go away and play in Estonia or somewhere and work his way up through the ranks, I think, because he's just not.
And
he's sullied by having a 30 million price tag. Yeah. And I know that's not his fault. We've said several times, but it doesn't help him. It doesn't help us.
I am fascinated to see where Fabio Silva's career goes in like 5 years' time. Like, you know, it's still kind of in the war. You know, who kind of knows where it's at the moment in terms of, you know, will he kind of move on permanently from Wolves? Will he stay? But, you know, 5 years' time, he's going to be, you know, 26 pushing 27.
It's been so bad. If he ended up playing tennis, I wouldn't be surprised. Do you know what I mean? Like, if he just decides, I'm done with football, I wouldn't be entirely shocked. Going to go the Polo Maldini route and just have a go at another sport. Fuck it.
Just try. No, I get your logic. I just think he's too weak-willed to do anything competitively.
Yeah. I think that's fair. Yeah. But
just, I feel sorry for him. You know, Wolves have played a big impact into not being able to support him, so to speak. And... it's a bad low move, and he's kind of done this kind of weird circular thing in these three low mills. He's kind of gone Anderlecht, PSV, Rangers, so kind of quite historic pedigree European teams. Like, they might not be like the upper echelons, but they are well-known clubs in well-known places. But I can feel like the whirlpool effect of him kind of going like, oh, he's going to be in, I know, Switzerland. I mean, it's Austria. And I mean, he's got Turkey written all over him, hasn't he?
Eventually, it'll just give up the ghost and he'll just fly off into the abyss, I think.
Yeah.
Which is such a shame because, obviously, he was very highly touted. There is a reason we paid a lot of money for him. But it's just gone wrong from day one for a multitude of reasons. Some his own fault, some the club's fault. It is a shame, regardless of what happens next.
Yeah, I was going to say back to the first goal. I do like, as you said, Stu, Huang's got like two special moves. The first is the feint inside and the rolled finish, and the second one is, you know, an 85th minute back to goal, really heavy pass going towards your own goal. And he did it yesterday. I mean, it might not have been that late, forgive me, but it was just one where like it just completely like, you know, bag of cement. I was like, we've grown out of this season. You're better than that.
He did look a little bit rusty at times yesterday. Yeah. Like, he was really, really good. And then, as you say, he was leaden at points. So I think it might just be a case of getting minutes in his body and he'll eventually come back to what we got to see earlier in the season.
Yeah. And I do think, you know, we should talk about, you know, genuinely like how good he has been this season. You know, he's on 11 goals for the season. He has been a consistently really strong player for Wolves. I think it's what 26 league games he's played this season in the end or so far. So, you know, his goal scoring record's good, and I don't massively remember him scoring, you know, too many braces either. So actually, like, his goals have been quite consistently spread in a way as well. I don't know. I just think he's, you know, really stepped up a notch, and if he can just work out those bits of injuries. I mean, hopefully, you know, we won't have to deal with a Klinsmann Asia Cup, you know, farce ever again. But yeah, I don't know. I thought he's someone who, and yeah, we'll do a end of season wrap up, you know, in about a month's time anyway. But you know, he is someone who's under Large has probably had the biggest upturn for me. I know you could say Aitnori, but in like where his stock was at Wolves a year ago, like he was a joke. We made literal jokes about him on this show, to him now being, we cannot play a game of football without him.
Yeah. He's gone from being called Wank every week by everyone to being essential, like you said. And people didn't think he could play through the middle either. And he was like, well, we've got no evidence to prove that he can or he can't. And now he looks better through the middle than anywhere else.
Yes.
And you've got to give Gary O'Neill credit for that, because it's down to coaching. It has to be.
There's something to be said for a player who, even when they don't have a good game, is still going to get you a goal. And I think he played well yesterday, but there have been other times this season where, for 89 minutes, he's offered very little, but he's still got you a goal to either win or draw a match. And I think that's a really good attribute to have. That's big player mentality for me, that you can still impact the game even if you've had 89 minutes of just turgid nonsense.
Yeah, I think, you know, he's clearly, if nothing else, you say he's a good finisher. It's natural, or it's so well drilled into him. You just can rely on him.
Again, it's the composure. He's such a composed player when he's on the ball. Like, you never feel like he's rushing to do anything. If he needs to take an extra touch, he will take that touch. I really like Wang, which is not something I thought I would have said a year ago, like you said.
I mean, like, you know, everything we've kind of said about sort of Fabio Silva is the opposite. It's the opposite of someone like Huang. Like, you know, that absolute ice in your veins in the penalty box. I mean, again, I know Fabio Silva's 21 and, you know, Huang's what, 26, 27 he must be now? 28 even. Like, you know, but I didn't have any doubt in my mind when he kind of was in the box and he was kind of, you know, moving forward and sort of driving forward. I was like, actually, you know what? He's going to get a shot off here. And he took his time for it, because that's what he wanted to do, rather than, oh, hang on, the defender's close. Like, he had it all sort of mapped out a bit more than, you know, other strikers I've seen at Wolves in recent years. So, yeah, it's really good. And, you know, great comment on from Mike Evans, sort of saying the World Cup gave him confidence, I'd say. And yeah, I think sort of a bit of time away from Wolves and, you know, having a chance to sort of recalibrate and find, you know, that bit about what you're good at, definitely sort of stood out. And, you know, Wolves were kind of very much, you know, going through the gears for me for a lot of the game, and were kind of finding their mojo and managed to get the second goal from a lovely set piece move, boys.
It was so good that half the team ran to the bench, which they didn't cover on Saturday, which was disappointing. But you could see, well, yeah, they've actually worked on something, and it paid them in, like Arsenal today, when they targeted Spurs for that reason, that the Spurs are dodgy at crosses from corners. And it's practice makes perfect. And we've been awful at corners for so many years. And the fact that we're actually trying things now and it comes off. But we don't know the real reason is because the totty doddy tail like Cisco again. And that's the real reason for everything.
Yeah. Like, you know, it is just like a force of nature, isn't it? It's, you know, Carl Ancelotti eyebrows, Sean Dyche tracksuit, Toto Gomez's bleached hair.
Iconic.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I love a training ground goal. And that one in particular is interesting because usually it's like, you know, it's one pass and then crossing. But, you know, it took like four players to score that goal.
It was a well-worked move. It was moving pieces that Luton never switched on to. So we just exploited it. We did well, and because we never vary up the same with every time we get any kind of dead ball situation, be it a throw-in or a corner or whatever, it was nice to try something different and for it to work. So long may it continue.
And to have Totti as the main man, I know it probably wasn't meant for a diving header, but regardless, Totti being the target of all of this, you wouldn't expect it, would you? Because he'd scored, what, one goal before then in the Premier League? So he's not exactly prolific like Wang is. So for him to score in the manner that he did as well, fair play all round. It's a brilliant goal.
Yeah, and I think if you kind of watch the movement back, effectively, depending on the trajectory of Lemina's kind of cross, and it ends up going, you know, quite deep, you effectively have a line. I think it's Doherty, then Wang, then Toti, then Kilman, who I guess on the E4 probably strongest set piece attackers, like, so actually, yeah, like, depending on, like, because obviously it's a interesting ball for Lamina to kind of whip in, and it's fantastic. And as Chris Rogers has sort of said, Toto Gomez is an unsung hero for me this season, and he's right. He's someone who gets a bit of flack because he can look a little bit clumsy, for want of a better term, and, you know, he can look a little bit interesting on the ball sometimes, but he's not someone who has many howlers in him. He just consistently does the job, and I think we said maybe start of last season, definitely he seems to have properly filled the void that Saïss has left now for me.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think he was early days, Toti, I thought, oh, I don't know. He looks very, like you say, he looks uncomfortable. He kind of reminded me of Courtney House in his early days here. Yeah. That he never looked quite right as a footballer. Like, his body position and everything didn't scream a natural centre half. And I think maybe this sort of conversion into this centre half come left back, this versatility by sort of going with his strengths, has helped him look so much better, and it's helped with his consistency, because he's ended up being not a jack of all trades, but a master of all trades. Like, he covers both positions really well, which allows Ike Nouri to play his game. So I think he's been pivotal, really, in how especially that left side has been such a strong attribute for us this season.
Yeah, I was going to say, you throw Cunha into that left-hand side as well, and they all cover each other's backs. They all know their job to perfection, and you don't do that if you ain't got something up top. So he's because of how he he runs in a very weird way as well sometimes, which doesn't help him. It's a bit like Chicken George and Dara in that sense. But he's, I think he's talking about size. He reminds me at times more like Bolly. You know, which Bolly in a back five again today for Forest. You think, oh yeah, he looks like he did for us a lot of the time there. But I think Totti Gomez has got the physicality that Bolly did have, but he's more skillful. And like you just said, Andy, you couldn't see Bolly covering two positions. So left hand side of defence, even though we've got a left footed centre half there anyway, he's better than Kilman on that side, which is bizarre. But because he does cover two places, I think he won't get player of the year, but I think a shout for being in the conversation of the top five easily.
Would he get your clubman of the year, Stu? Which is definitely not a category I've got planned for the Fancast unofficial official end of season awards.
I think he gets style icon of the year for the marketing genius and in this shirt, the third shirt for the audio people.
Yeah,
with the sunglasses and the jaw.
He's a good looking boy, Stu.
Yeah, I did think maybe naively that I would look that good by in this top. And obviously,
and then you realise you don't look like Totti Gomez.
Yeah, there's a few similarities there, obviously, but not. It doesn't end.
I mean, Stu, we all know you'd go for the bleached blonde hair again if you in a second.
Again, being the word that could have contributed to my hair falling out. Maybe. Don't do it, kids. Do it properly. Go to a hairdresser. Don't use a bottle at home.
I'm trying to work out if I can do any sort of callback to the game. I don't think I can, so I'm just going to do it as awkwardly as. This is an advertisement from Better Help Therapy Online. We all carry different stresses, big and small. It could be from work, stuff going on at home, or just from supporting a football team. You flatter to deceive, and as the bed sheets have always said, let us down. We often bottle up these stresses and try and keep a lid on them, but when you do that, it can start to affect you negatively. That's where therapy comes in. It gives you a place to get these things off your chest, get down to root cause and figure out how to work through what's weighing you down. Therapy is there to help develop positive coping skills. It's not just for people who have experienced major trauma. It's about empowering you to be the best version of yourself. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not look and give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible and suited to your schedule. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners can get 10% off their first month using the code betterhelp.com/wanderers. That's betterhelp.com/wanderers. Let's get back to the show.
I'm happy. I really enjoy him, and I get the only kind of fear I have with him, and I think we just about managed it under Sace. But like, I guess if you look at our strongest team on paper, and he is in that team, if you're like looking at, well, hang on, where's the next area we need to improve? It would arguably be his position, but he seems to be a very good squad player as well, and that actually, if we did end up upgrading that position, we have a really strong, versatile, still quite young player who's not necessarily screaming, if I'm not going to play, I'm going to go and I'll bide my time. And I think that's the thing that enamored a lot of people to Sace as well, that there were periods in his Wolves career that he didn't necessarily start. And, you know, under Nuno, there were points where he, you know, whether it was Ndai would start in midfield or, you know, that back three was, you know, Bennett, Cody, Bolly. But when we needed to him, when Nuno needed him, you relied on him. And I think that's, I guess what I mean by kind of comparisons to Sace, that he's kind of clearly a very popular guy. He's clearly got a bit of a aura and charisma about him in terms of being a bit of a locker room guy. To kind of go down the American sports reference. So it's like, even if we did kind of get in another centre half this summer to replace him or Dawson or whoever, like him being, you know, the next man up, you could see him being okay with that and still kind of re-chomping up a bit for his opportunity, because you're right. It could be he comes in at centre half. He might have to come in at left wing back because ultimately he trusts him more than he might do Hugo Bueno.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. I mean, to be honest, though, I wouldn't be surprised if like bigger European fighting clubs would be in for him. Because I do think he's an interesting player, and that versatility is such a boon to have in any player. And I don't think we have a lot of players who can cover a lot of positions. So he's someone I would want to be tying down to a long-term contract. I think he's earned it like this last year and a bit. He's really grown and he gets better and better each game. I really like Tati Gomez. I think it could be a bit of a, I was going to say urban legend, that's not the one I'm looking for. A bit of a cult hero in you know, a couple of years' time, maybe.
Yeah, I think he's definitely getting there already. And you look at him, you think, well, the reason that he would be sold was for book reasons. He cost 900 grand.
Yeah.
So you look at him now, you're putting the performances in. I mean, what's the stock price for a Premier League centre-back now? 20 million, probably, something silly like that. So...
I mean, because I know he signed a contract extension earlier this season, I think, and I remember sort of saying at the time, it's like the perfect win-win-win because, like, we've got him secured for the indefinite. If we upgrade him and we need to sell, he's proven himself at Premier League level now. So if, you know, Leicester, who have just got promoted, want to get a centre-half in, then he could go to a team like that. And great, he sold for that amount, or he ups his game to that next kind of ceiling. And he is someone who has, you know, been pushing his ceiling higher and higher and higher because, you know, he's in the Portugal squads now. And I don't necessarily think I'd have seen that for him a couple of years ago. And that's kind of credit to him and the coaches here. So actually, you're right. If a even bigger club come in for him, pick a name sort of thing, you know, Atletico Madrid, then actually goes for 40 million and you go, fucking amazing. Yeah. So, you know, it's all win-win-win for Wolves and hopefully the player as much as anything else at the moment. And it did sort of feel after 2-0, the sun was shining.
Still cold though.
It's
ridiculous.
Baltic. But it just felt a bit party time all of a sudden, and like the, you know, the shackles were off, and that was very much epitomised for me by Nelson Semedo going on a big old jolly.
He just can't do it, can he? He's just impossible for him.
I mean, shot he had this season ended up going down as an own goal. He's never going to get that goal in front of a full house, is he? Feel for him.
He did really everything right. He turned into like prime Helder Costa and just fucked it up.
But I don't know what it was almost like he thought, oh, I'm up in here, what do I do? I'm scared. And I mean, at this point, Tom King is going to score before he does. And it's just like some players just can't strike the ball, can they? They just can't do it. And he's one of these players. He's bundled it in a behind closed doors. Well, there's a bit 4,000 people on there for that Man United game when he got his first. And you think, okay, something's just got to hit him once from a corner. But he never goes up for corners because he can't do it. That's why he's always left back. And it's just tragic. Because I think the one time, if it actually ever does happen, the place is going to explode. Especially now he's not hated anymore. And that he's got his own song and everything. And he's one of these that you just want it to happen so much. It's like the Mo Camara effect.
The masochist in me would be fascinated to watch him take a penalty.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I wouldn't have much faith in that, to be honest.
I can't imagine striking it.
No. No, it would be Beckham in the World Cup when he bloomed it over, I think. He would do everything perfectly well up until the point where he slips over just as he's about to kick it. Because that seems to be his luck when it comes in front of goal. And I really wanted to get that goal because he deserves it. And as you said, Stu, he's got his chant now. He is genuinely loved. I said on Twitter the other day, we used to talk about a Kevin Foley kind of player. Someone who would give you 7 out of 10 every single week. We should change that now to the Nelson Semedo kind of player. Because he has been Mr. Consistent this season. Probably the most consistent of anybody in the you know, anyone who's played more than 10 games this season for us, I think. It's been outstanding.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. But life, free certainties, aren't there? Death, taxes, and Wolves making you brick it out on a 2-0 lead at some point, because fuck me, they pulled it back through Morris. I mean, but firstly, there were rumblings of an offside, because in the build-up, I can't remember which Luton Town player it was. Shankly shot so badly from a corner, it went back out to the original corner taker. And because if you watch it on like TV and you watch the highlights back, you don't quite necessarily see where he was. And I did see the tinfoil hats, you know, slowly being, you know, ironed out to wear. But are we all sort of pretty happy Lamina was playing him on? I think it would have been. I mean, Stu, you'd have had a good view from your side, wouldn't you?
Yeah, okay. It was obviously where in prime position, and it was. I mean, you can't moan a bit, can you? Because it's so ridiculous. I mean, I can't remember a time when that's happened. Well, from that position, from the other side of the penalty area, then get it so wrong that it goes straight back out again. It never crossed my mind that he was off, because it was just one of them things where it happened so quickly and it was so farcical that there were people still deep because it then had a chance to get out. So I didn't see, obviously I was there, so I didn't see any check or anything or any lines or whatever, but it was never close for me.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I'm in the South Bank, so my first thought was, oh, that's got to be close at least, because he was still stood in the D of the corner. But obviously from where I am, I can't see it. And I've got to be honest, I haven't actually seen that goal back. But from what I've heard on Twitter and everything, he's not on any pictures, so you can't really tell.
No, it's very much like Nunes at Anfield, where, part of me's like, no, they wouldn't be that, you know, incompetent to not check. And then I hear what I say out loud. But anyway, good instinctive finish from Morris. And I don't actually think Saar can do an awful lot about it, because it comes through a lot of players very quickly, and it's almost one of those where it's too close to him to actually be able to. It looks great, worse than it is for Saar, but yeah, it's great. It was a really clean hit.
I like him, and yeah. Andy called him a big lump, that big lump of a number nine early in the game. I thought, no, you don't
curse him. He is. I don't mean that in a negative way. He is, like, he's a big physical fucker. And he doesn't look like he's going to put himself about and be as agile as he is, but he has got something about him. But, like, there's no mistake in it. He's got some timber on him, but I think he's mostly muscle rather than fat. He's no fucking Kevin Coyle, is he? Let's be honest.
No. I like him. We could do a lot worse. And you think, well, if they more than likely are going to be going down now, you might be able to get him for relatively sensible money. It's relative being the word, but you look at him, you've got 10 Premier League goals for a team that are so bad like they are. It's a pretty impressive record. He's not slow. He works his arse off. Yeah, he's older now. He's 28 maybe, but fine. I'd rather have him than Che Adams, put it that way. I'd rather have him than Danny Ings. He's proved himself in the Premier League. He's not going to shirk and hide. He's done his hard yards in the lower leagues. If we signed him for 12, 15 million quid, I wouldn't know where that money's going to come from. Who knows? Because not doing it. But if he was an option, I wouldn't be disappointed whatsoever.
I don't know if he'd be worth the money at 28. I think Che Adams would be a better deal because of it being a free. He's got a decent record at this level. I don't think there's a great deal between the two of them personally. It's much of a muchness, to be perfectly honest, for me.
Yeah, I think I guess you got some interesting comparisons because Elijah Adebayo of Luton as well. I mean, he's got 9 Premier League goals, which when you say a lot, you know, if he manages to get a goal in the next 3 games, like, they'll have 2 players with double figures this season. I mean, they scored most of their goals. I appreciate the maths on it. He was a couple of years younger as well. I guess the other one who's been, I say, linked, not necessarily by anyone in particular, is Cameron Archer as well, at Sheffield United, who has always been, you know, highly thought of. But whether he's quite, again, what Wolves are looking for, and it's all going to be, you know, will Wolves have any money to spend, really, won't it?
Yeah, which is probably why Che Adams will be here, because he doesn't cost anything. Archer to me looks like he needs a proper run out. And if you're going for Sheffield United players, I know he's not theirs, but Brereton Diaz, long time fan of him. Even before he went to Villarreal, I mean, there's a deal to be done there with that wastrel. If we could just get a swap deal, that'd be great. He's another one that he's looked pretty good at times. He's looked pretty average at others. But he's playing for the worst time, one of the worst sides in Premier League history, and not looking out of place in the league. So, again, for me, like, good comment there by Mark Evans bringing up Solanke. People wrote Solanke off, and then he's had the season of his life. So, we've got these players who just need a chance sometimes.
Mm.
I think each of them have got something about them, but it's going to be Che Adams. But
there's a lot that can be said for, you know, someone like Dominic Solanke and probably someone like Cameron Archer next season to have, like, a full season in the Championship and to really kind of just build up your trade, because Solanke's always been someone who's highly thought of, like, you know, to kind of go through, did he go Chelsea to Liverpool or Liverpool to Chelsea? You know, he was at both of those clubs and then got the big money move, you know, to Bournemouth, which, you know, he struggled with for a while, Price, and actually having that development to his game. And he's kind of worked on his, you know, on his game for a while now, and it's paying dividends now. And, like, you look at someone like Solanke's record where, you know, he had a really good loan spell at Middlesbrough last season, where, you know, he gets, you know, I think a goal every other game, it effectively works out to. But if you're only basing everything off, like, you know, 20 games, effectively half a season's worth, it's not quite enough to rebuild up that pedigree, which is why, you know, I understand why we go, well, Che Adams, because you know where you stand with him. And I know it's going to be curious in the summer in terms of which way we go. But Wolves did hold out, fellas, and it's made the table look a little bit more happier, I guess. You know, we're still not quite back in the top 10 because of bloody Bournemouth being really good today. I guess more interesting, I get, you know, from not necessarily the Wolves' perspective, because where we finish at the moment depends on, well, to be honest, how much we can get. If we can get a win against Palace, and then if we can somehow get a point from either Man City or Liverpool, and hit that 50 points, and I sort of think if we get 50 points, we might just finish 10th or 11th.
Yeah, I think it's a big ask now. I mean, Palace are flying themselves. I mean, that I think that's going to be a really good game as well. I can't wait to watch. I mean, Palace is one of them teams. Selhurst, it's always, most of the times, it's disappointment going all that way. But we have had their number over the years at home. So I'm more thinking the points are going to come from there than the other two. But Liverpool are looking like they've dropped off a cliff. They're all fighting each other. It's all glorious. And so if we got something there on the final day, and just to ruin everything for them would be brilliant. But do I think it's going to happen? No, because it is his last game there. And Man City are just they're on their usual Man City surge to the title, aren't they? So I think if we get 50 points after what's happened this season, it'll be incredible. I'd more than likely expect one more, and just to come up at 47, which would be sad for the old bank balance, because that top half bet as well. But it's one of them. I, I don't expect it now, and I kind of, because I don't expect it, if it happens, it'll be better, and it's something more, it's more of an achievement. But yeah, I think for me, 47 will probably be where we finish.
I agree with you, Stu, to be honest. I think we, I think 50 is it's too much, to be honest. I can't see us getting anything on either of the two of the top four clubs, and Palace, as you said, flying high at the minute. It'll be a tough ask. I think, realistically, 47 is so much better than we ever expected. It just feels quite deflating because we had such a good middle portion of the season. But when it's come to the crunch, literally the players were crunching because they just dropped like flies and we couldn't keep going, could we? It's a shame, but it's a successful season regardless, I think.
Yeah, something Gary Neil said after the game, in line with that, was not only have we a small squad, we've got a group of players who aren't used to playing 38, 40 games seasons. Zhao, Totti, I think it's this is the most Mario's... this is Mario's biggest season, Cunha's biggest season. There's loads of them who have used to play, have had to play a lot more football, really. And it's, yeah, it's dropped off a cliff. And I just want to hope that we get a little bit of something just to drive us through, just to be like a little bit more, you know, consistent, right? And just not peter out a season. I would say, fun one, a couple of things to sort of be a bit of fun. Favourite headed goals at, down Molineux in particular? Because Toto Gomez, we talked, it was a lovely old goal. What have you got a standout one?
That Dean Richards against the Albion one that was on the visual just then. That is a great memory. Dean Richards has always been one of my favourite ever Wolves players, wearing my favourite ever Wolves kit and obviously scoring against the Sheet. That's a great memory, to be honest.
Yeah. That was a good one. I mean, Stu, do you know one of I immediately thought of when I saw a tweet earlier? It was Jody Craddock versus Southampton in the rain and the neck muscles. Ah, yes, please.
Mine was Bully against Birmingham, I think.
3-2.
When he went running with his fist in the air like that in front of him. That was a glorious night. Or Dale, I can't remember. It was a long time ago. But yeah, that was the first one that came to mind. But there's a few. I mean, Craddock was just legendary at it. I remember when he did it, when he got knocked out against the post at Southend away. just a legend. The Bully one for me.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say, completely forgot to, in terms of sort of highlights, you know, obviously having 8 Norrie back, and Cunha back, but just their little bit of skill. Just, it's nice when they're having fun in it. And we're playing
the Rabona. It's the first time we've done a Rabona that hasn't been Raul Jimenez and gone out immediately for a goal kick. It was lovely.
I miss the days of Raul Jimenez. I'm gonna be a really talented footballer, a really astute marksman, but I'm not going to use my left foot to cross the ball.
I don't know why he was so obsessed with the Rabona, because he never came off. And I think that's what made me love him even more, was the fact that he just... Like, if it had worked just once, I think he'd have done a fucking lap of honour on his own. But
It's like Eric Lamella doing it, isn't it? But he scored with it, and it's like, well, I've done it now. Or like Quaresma with it. Is it called a Travella? Were you outside boot finish?
Yeah.
Just call it with the outside of your boot. Brexit means Brexit, you know?
I was going to say, if I'd have said something like this, we know what would have happened. He'd probably be straight on me. But I did love how that Aiden Uri shared that video himself as well and tagged Cunha in it on Instagram, on his stories. But yeah. You know, mates, what you're about doing.
Yeah, just having fun. Like, look, Wolves have got nothing to play for. Might as well just make it, you know, their little playground for a bit.
And again, it comes back to what we said earlier about that left-hand side of the pitch and the chemistry between them. It's just there.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully Wolves get, you know, Neto's nearing fitness. I don't... Whether we see him in the next 3 weeks, I personally doubt.
No.
You might maybe get some run out against Liverpool, to be honest. But I think that might be more for Euros / shop window purposes, personally.
Yeah.
I think so. We'll see. Well, we will be back to preview the Man City game because, you know, we'll be fine against them, won't we? They're not on some sort of like fucking juggernaut road path at the moment. Jesus Christ. I mean, they're going to win the league, aren't they?
Yeah, of course they are.
Like, 6 times out of the last 7.
Seven,
is it, I think.
Yeah.
First time 4 in a row.
Like, thing is, part of me is like, oh, you don't want that. But then it's like, do you want Arsenal winning it?
No.
Yeah, no. So you can't
this
win.
This is it, isn't it?
You don't want Liverpool winning it. So,
no, yeah. Never like, Liverpool.
Which is the least evil of them winning.
Well, the thing is, Man City are the most evil because of their owners and everything. I think they are literally been what part of what's wrong with football. But every Man City fan I've met has been sound. They've been a good club because they kind of feel like us, mostly. Whereas Arsenal fans have been supporting a rapist and Liverpool fans are Liverpool fans. So it's just impossible to get behind anybody else in the 3 of them.
Yeah. And it's not even Arsenal fan TV's legacy. They've always been like this. So.
Oh, yeah.
If they'd thrown it away today, it would have been hilarious. Just because you just knew what you'd see on Twitter for days on end. But then, sadly, they did kind of hang on for a change and didn't. I mean, Spurs, but that's a different story. But yeah, I've got no problem with Man City. Man City fans are sound any Man City fan over 25 is sound. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. The younger ones are very entitled as you'd expect them to be with winning things all the time. But yeah, the ones who did the hard yards and had the hardship, they know where they came from. And they've always been pretty good and decent people whenever we've been up there. Arsenal and Liverpool, they have not. So fuck them.
Well, there you go. I guess that's who you guys both want to win the title. Oh, that's yeah. You're right. And hey, I've got an irrational dislike of Arsenal. As much as I try to they're Arsenal, aren't they? Ultimately. And I guess the other one which we'll get to watch over the next couple of weeks is the relegation running, of course. And as the Premier League tweeted, then deleted, about, you know, Sheffield United are, you know, being relegated pending appeals from Everton and Forest. But I mean, they're down, they're banked, and, you know, effectively a point now separate, well, 2 points separates Forest, Luton and Burnley with a game to go. I'll be honest, I think if you're finishing a Premier League season with under 30 points, which is realistic for all of those teams, you really don't deserve to be in the league.
That's fair. Both of the teams who get to the playoff final should come up instead.
Yeah.
Because those 4 clubs at the bottom have been absolutely turgid. They've been dreadful to watch this season. Like, if any, you know, any 3 of the 4 goes, they won't be missed at all.
Yeah. All right. Andy, I love the idea of both, like, you know, you win your playoffs and you're through, rather than kind of, but what if there's a certain team in blue and white who?
Yeah, that's the worry.
That is the only caveat. I mean, we would potentially get to see them get relegated again. So
yeah,
they've got to finish in the playoffs first.
Exactly. True. Like they're on the knife edge at the minute.
Yeah.
Hulk can nip in there and get the job done, hopefully.
Yeah. But yeah, they're all turgid at the bottom, as shown yesterday by Luton. But hey, look, as I said, we will be back to preview the Man City game happening next weekend. And make sure to keep up to date with all things Wolves Fancast at Wolves Fancast on all your usual spots. That's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, wherever you fancy finding us. Make sure, as I mentioned at the front of the show, to check out all of our stuff regarding our charity football match this year and where you can donate. As I mentioned, it's in the description if you so choose. Big thanks again to everyone who's listened. And until next time, it's goodbye from Andy.
See you later, everybody.
It's goodbye from Stu.
Goodbye, everyone. Have a good week.
is goodbye for me. We'll see you next time.